it is in the big, big world. Conservative in the big, big world on a Wednesday. You so pretty. Hair is shiny and bouncy. So snuggly in your blankie on you's couch. You quusty blankie. Sorry, that is like a voice that's stuck in my head. There's some girl. She's always viral on TikTok on my For You page. She talks like that to her dog. It's like this little chihuahua named Monty or something. She's always talking like that. She's like, you stretching in the sun, get a suntan in the big, big world. Him so ready for the day. I don't know. It's just like, and now I just want to talk like that all the time. Anyway, hello. Thumbs up and subscribe. I had to mess with you guys in the live. If you were a little early, you got a little treat, a surprise from me today because we're unhinged. This is the last Poplitics Live of the year. Unhinged goodness. So welcome to Poplitics Live. I'm Alex Clark. This is pop culture without the leftist propaganda. Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, except this is the last one of the year because of America Fest and holiday break. So America Fest is Turning Point USA's biggest conservative conference of the year. It's December 16th through 19th in Phoenix, Arizona. It is for all ages, even families. Feature speakers like Tucker Carlson, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Prager, Candace Owens, Rob Schneider. Concerts from Big and Rich and Low Cash this year. You can get tickets at amfest.com with code REALALEXCLARK for 25% off. amfest.com, code REALALEXCLARK for 25% off general admission. Now, speaking of AM Fest, this Gorgina Deep Plum Wine crew neck that I'm wearing, I posted an up close picture on my story of what's going on. It's hard for me to tell with the camera, like what you can say. I showed an up-close picture on my Instagram story a minute ago of what's happening here, and I don't know. I can't tell with these lives. The color's always a little bit off, but, like, it is rich, deep plum eggplant vibes, but, like, way better than normal eggplants, like, elevated, rich, expensive-looking eggplant. Anyway, at AM Fest, this feminine and based. It says feminine and based in like a gorgeous cursive. Then it says cute servative since 2019 because the cute servative movement was started by moi in 2019. Yes, it does aggravate me when I see merch and crap online that says cute servative with absolutely zero credit. It's like, it's honestly infuriating. Drives me up a wall. But that is my work. It is my word that I came up with in my own brain. Credit where credit is due. So feminine and based, cute servative since 2019. It has a little crest. And then the crest, it says AC. And then under that, you can't see, but it's a little ribbon. Kind of like the stay-at-home mom sweatshirt. It's a little ribbon. And it says LYMIB for love you mean it by. It's simple. It's classic preppy. It's minimalist and a color that looks incredible on every skin tone. The palest of the pale, my vampire girlies that have never seen the sun, and my deep ebony cute servatives, okay? It looks good on everybody. Blonde, brunette, redheads. It's like truly the one universal color. Honestly, I think this deep of a purple, it's a universal color. And it's a thick crew neck, very, very soft, like luxurious type of material here. But the catch is this is only going to be for sale at America Fest this year. So there's good and bad news here. America Fest only. So the good news is if you're going to America Fest, you're like guaranteed you can get this. The bad news is I can't guarantee that your size is going to be available after America Fest. So what we're doing is America Fest girlies, cute servatives, get this first dibs on their size. Whatever is left over, the good news for those who can't go, whatever is left over will go on tpusamerch.com in January. So I don't know what that means. None could be left and then it doesn't. Two could be left, you know, one in an extra large and one in an extra small. I don't know. It will be available in an extra small. The size I have on is still roomy and it's an extra small. But anyway, this will be on tpusamerch.com, God willing, in January. What sizes couldn't tell you. But if you want it for sure, AM Fest, if you know somebody going and you can't go, then Venmo the money and tell them to pick you up one. That's all I got to tell you about that. So Uh It's hard to tell if it will sell out. What's interesting is that, I mean, a lot of you don't go to any conferences except the Young Women's Conference this summer, YWLS. So it's like with something like this, I don't know. I think that there will be some left. I just don't know what sizes. Like, I can't anticipate what sizes. It really depends on the attendees and how cold they are. And I will say that the conference center is absolutely ungodly freezing every year. So it's like you want to bundle up and most people are cold and they end up wanting to buy sweatshirts because they're freezing. So like we could sell more just because people are cold. I mean, it just is what it is. So yeah, just be looking for that on TPUSAmerch.com in January. Obviously, I'll post on Poplitics stories and my stories on Instagram, like when we're going to post them with whatever is left. But it's not going to be something that unless it's like unbelievable demand where we sell out at AM Fest and it's like everybody wants this, then like maybe we'll restock. But it depends. You know, when things like don't really sell that well, I'm not going to restock. Or if it's just something real special and exclusive, then I don't want to restock. Anyway, I don't know how much this is. If Katie, my helper behind the scenes, wants to ask how much it is, because I don't know. So when she tells me, if we know, then I will tell you. But I don't know how much. Okay, she's going to find out. What are we talking about today? Two juicy stories, two juicy things for you to watch. Finally, some fun homework for you. I have found some great stuff to binge. I watched last weekend. We're going to talk about Paris Hilton's recent motherhood revelations. I actually think that the entire way that she's gone about motherhood is vile and selfish. And I'm not holding back any punches today. Taylor Swift was crowned the Time Magazine Person of the Year. A lot of conservatives, namely Jack Posobiec, my friend. But Jack, believes this is undeserved. It's all part of a master political plan. I'll give my opinion on that. Plus, discuss some of the best tidbits from her Time interview for those that didn't read it, like some of the juicy parts. And then I will give you my two recommendations for things to watch. This is the last Poplitics Live of 2023, so thumbs up the video and subscribe. All however many couple hundred of you that are in here, hit the thumbs up. I will get violent. I will get violent. Floppy Mike, that's what she said. Sorry, I'm looking at the chat. Okay. All right. So Paris Hilton's disturbing path to motherhood. Paris Hilton has done some really interesting interviews lately. It isn't news that she used a surrogate. We have known that. But the more that comes out, the more of an ick I've gotten. And I have to talk about it because it is just, it's unbelievably disturbing, the stuff that has been shared here. And I like Paris Hilton a lot, by the way. Like, she's somebody that I think would be fun to hang out with. I think a lot of other stuff with her I would agree on. It's just her view on motherhood and surrogacy that I think is super, super disturbing, unethical, and I have serious moral concerns. Okay, this crew neck is going to be $60 at AM Fest. $60 or $60 on TPUSAmerch.com if we have some to sell on TPUSAmerch.com. So, Paris Hilton, number one, revealed the reason that she used a surrogate for her son that she just had named Phoenix, and also she's about to have a daughter. She used a surrogate for her, too. The whole reason that Paris Hilton decided to use a surrogate was because she was simply scared to be pregnant. She talked about how she is just like she has a lot of issues with, physical intimacy and stuff like that because of abuse that she endured at a boarding school growing up that she was sent away. It was like a really messed up school, tons of lawsuits, how they treated kids. The same thing happened to Kat Von D. So I understand that. And I do have sympathy for going through something traumatic like that. However, her reasoning of, because I've endured some traumatic stuff in my past, and I'm just also just scared of pregnancy in general, I want to use a surrogate to be able to have a child, is not an excuse. I think it's a terrible excuse. And there are so many reasons why we should be against surrogacy, because number one, of the cruelty of the way that a lot of surrogates are treated, but also because you are ripping a child away from the only mother that they've known for 9 months and giving them to a stranger. Paris Hilton was a stranger to her child at first. They had no idea who she was. They didn't recognize her voice, nothing about her, right? The person that that baby would have identified with as a mother would have been the person who carried him. I think it's cruel and selfish to say, well, I'm just scared of being pregnant, so I'm going to use a surrogate. If you're scared to have a baby like that, like if that's the whole thing with you, then your options, in my opinion, are to not have a child, period, or adoption. Adoption or do not have kids. Because motherhood requires selflessness. That is what motherhood is. And you say, well, I don't understand. How can you say that, like, you're ripping a child away from its mother, so surrogacy is bad, but adoption is good? Because, I will explain to you, adoption is a response to a tragic situation. It restores what a child has lost. Surrogacy creates a tragic situation. It deliberately inflicts loss on a child. And so now it all makes sense to me. This news story that came out this week saying that she didn't change her baby's diapers for the first month of his life. She just outsourced that to a nanny or whatever. Did not change one diaper for one whole month because that also scared her and, like, I didn't want to do it. Okay. All of this to me is a glaring red flag that she is not bonding with her baby or is way behind on bonding with her baby. And it also explains why in so many photos with her kid, the way she's holding him and stuff, it's like, do you even know this child? I've said that from the beginning. Like, she just holds this baby like they don't even know each other. And I'm like, the whole thing is so, it's like it's broken this, I think, the bond. And I'm not, you know, just like making this up out of thin air. This is a known thing that happens to a lot of parents who choose surrogacy. I'm not saying you never bond with your child, but it does take them usually a lot longer, and it's a way bigger struggle for moms to bond with their babies. And guess what? Khloe Kardashian admitted this. Khloe Kardashian used a surrogate with one of her kids and not the other, and she has talked openly about that, I think on The View or some interview. She said, like, yeah, so, and attributed it to using surrogate. She said, like, with my pregnancy, I had no issues. With my surrogate baby, it was really hard to bond with him. So Khloe has talked about this before. And that makes sense to me. If you're not bonded to your child or whatever, it's like, I don't want to change diapers. It's like weird holding it. Like, the whole thing is just so off. But I can't get over the selfishness of, like, well, I'm just scared to be pregnant, but it's my right to have a child and a designer child at that. So I'm going to make another woman, I'm going to rent her womb and make her carry the child. And then I'm going to inflict loss on that child by taking him away from her. It's just, the whole thing is gross to me. And I believe, I need to double check this, but I am pretty sure that Paris also, for this baby that she had that was a girl, can my team do it? It's a lot easier for you to do it. Did Paris Hilton discard embryos until she was told she was going to have a girl? I'm pretty sure she created boy after boy after boy embryo, and she kept doing it until she had a girl one. And then she's like, perfect, now I'm going to have this girl. I'm going to name her London. It was all part of this big announcement that she just did. That right there also is another way you're commodifying human beings. You're making designer children, picking them out of a magazine. It's sickening. This is not normal behavior. Paris Hilton, and again, I like a lot of other things about her, but this, it's so disgusting and disturbing. It's like picking another baby out of a catalog. Like she picks her little designer dogs and she picks her designer bags. And now, well, a baby is another accessory to add to my life. And the whole thing just gives me the ick because, again, remember, children are not a right. And this is, as somebody who wants to be a mom more than anything in the world, this was a really hard thing for me to wrap my mind around in the last 2 years. But children are not a right. You and I do not have a right to become a parent. You have to understand that, because if you don't agree with or understand that concept, then you have all of this other icky things. If children are a right to adults, if every adult has the right to a child, then there is no ethical barrier. If children are right, there's no ethical barrier that you can place on how you are to obtain that child or get that right. Do you see what I'm saying? So you have to recognize children are not a right. No one has a right to become a parent. Children, however, have a right to know their biological mother and their father. Kids are not products that should be created, discarded, bought, and sold. Again, 20 babies. We have confirmation. Paris Hilton created 20 babies, 20 embryos, and discarded them until she got a girl. That, you guys, is the most deplorable, effed up behavior that I think I've ever heard. It makes me want to throw up. What else does this article say? Let's see. I'll Google it now that I know what the article is called. 20 babies, Paris Hilton. Okay. So here's Fox News or Page Six has talked about it. So she said to Glamour UK in February of this year, Carter, her husband, and I already had been talking about the future and the world was shut down. And I thought, what do you think about us making embryos? He said, yeah, let's do it. She said that the couple had successfully frozen 20 embryos since they started the process during the lockdown, all of which were boys. She said, we've done it 7 times. I have all boys. I have 20 boys. I just went through the process again a month ago. I'm waiting for the results to see if there's any girls. All of those lives were created that are all going to be thrown in the trash. Do you understand that? Do you see what I mean? It's evil. It's evil and selfish. And I don't think that it's malicious. I think she doesn't know any better. I don't think she has any of this information. And that's the problem, is that culture makes you believe that you have the right to become a parent. And so she just thinks, well, I can just do that however I want. You have to get over this. If the technology exists, then it just must be good. That is not true. It's not true. It's heartbreaking, this story. Absolutely heartbreaking. Oh, okay. So I'm going to read some of your comments about this. Amanda said, God help us. Someone else said, this is sick. What would have been wrong with having two boys? Someone else wants to know if I can make a short video about this topic again. I mean, I just did. When was my most recent Katie Faust episode? September, October? We did an extra video on top of our interview with her about a different subject. I think it was September. We made a separate video on the Real Alex Clark YouTube where she talks about this and what the future is going to look like when the majority of the babies in the human race are made with these different, like, weird fertility technologies. How everybody's going to be made in a lab and in artificial wombs, and like what that's going to mean for genetics of the human race, the emotional well-being of the human race, how that's going to affect all of these different things. Catherine says, people are sympathetic with gorillas and even turtles when it comes to making sure that they stay with mom and not disrupt nature, but they find it perfectly okay with taking the child away in a surrogacy process. That's exactly right. And that's really right there. Like, when people try to argue about this, you have to bring that up. How would you treat dogs or animals that are having a baby? Do you take them away? No, you never do that. Even when you think about, like, breeders, even when you're paying for a designer dog, the dog has to stay with that baby for a certain amount of time before you're allowed to pick up that puppy. But we don't treat human beings with the same decency. As soon as that baby comes out, the gay couple or whoever is waiting there in the room to snatch that baby and then put it on their chest and take a picture in the bed like they just went through the process of giving birth. So, yeah, this is the what they're showing right now on the screen is my conversation with Katie Faust from September, just a few months ago, if you scroll back on this issue. And it's a short, short video. It's probably, what, 15, 20 minutes. And so that's on top of I did a full length spillover interview with her last year on this topic. But if you want more, that video is a little additional stuff and with recent things in the news with fertility technology. A lot of you are saying this is really difficult to hear. It's messed up. Allison says, keep yelling this from the rooftops. Even the most well-meaning people do not understand it. That's the thing. This is one of those things that, like, the more people that use these methods of having kids, the harder and more uncomfortable it's going to get in your social settings to be able to talk about this. But we really, as pro-lifers, have an obligation, and just people that advocate for the rights of children, have an obligation to speak about the atrocities that are being committed with this technology. All right. So the next thing we have to talk about is Taylor Swift being on Time Magazine's Person of the Year named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Let's put a poll in the chat. Yes or no, do you think that this was deserving? Like, is it deserving for Taylor to get Time Person of the Year? Because I'm curious and I want to see the results. I want to see if you guys mostly agree or disagree that she should have been named that. Squeeze juice, by the way. We will put a code, my code for squeeze juice, 100% non-toxic, non-GMO. It's literally, this is the immunity juice, mandarin, ginger, carrot, 100% juice, not from concentrate. All that's in this, pomegranate juice, mandarin juice, apple puree, carrot juice, ginger juice, turmeric, habanero pepper, and vitamin C. That is it. It is so freaking pure, conservative-owned company, small family farm in California. It's excellent for being sick during the holidays. We'll put the link in the chat with the code, although I'm pretty sure that they are sold out of a lot. A lot of you have been buying this, and they're like, it's a small family farm, so they can barely keep up. So if there is any left, we'll put the code in the chat. Taylor Swift was named Time Person of the Year. And anyone, I'm going to say this, anyone who doesn't think this is deserved is ignorant and not very bright. Think about the past year, okay? Just if you're not driving, close your eyes. Think about the past year. Were you able to attend any social event or family gathering or outing with friends where Taylor Swift's name wasn't brought up at least once? I mean, I'm genuinely asking. Were you ever in a social gathering at all at any period of 2023 where you didn't hear the name Taylor Swift? How many times did you see her face scrolling Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram over the course of the year? She was selling out stadiums across the U.S. Towns were changing their names in favor of her. The Department of Transportation made Taylor references on interstate signs as you were driving. She made significant donations to food banks in each city that she went to. Cities saw such a significant boost in their economies that the phrase the Taylor Swift economy became a thing. Plus, she took over the NFL. Her first appearance at one of Travis's games garnered the second biggest amount of viewers since the Super Bowl for the NFL. This was a deserving title. You know, they gave it to Zelensky, I think, last year, and everybody was talking about Ukraine. All of it was Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. I mean, I'm not surprised, like, they didn't give it to the freaking leader of Hamas, honestly. But, like, between Hamas and Taylor Swift, I mean, it was definitely going to be one of them. I think also, arguably, you could have said it was Travis Kelce for Person of the Year. And I'm trying to think. I want to see your suggestions. If not Taylor, who would have been a good candidate for Person of the Year? Like a real, like somebody, I'm not, just take political views out of it. Jeez, can you please just think critically? Who was somebody that everybody talked about? Palestine, Taylor Swift, because, you know, and I am saying Palestine because, like, they're not going to put Israel. You know what I mean? They're not going to put Netanyahu. So it's like, could it be Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce? Who else?
Joe Biden, wake up.
Taylor Swift also this year became a billionaire solely based on her musical talent. That has only been achieved, I think, by Paul McCartney, maybe one other person. Can't remember. Paul McCartney for sure became a billionaire just for music. Jay-Z and Rihanna, you say, well, they're musical billionaires. Yes, but Jay-Z and Rihanna have brands that they cultivated. Rihanna has Fenty. She has fashion. She has a whole makeup line. Jay-Z, he has a record label, right? He's, I don't even know what. He's got tons of business stuff going on. I don't know if Michael Jackson was a billionaire. You can Google that for me and let me know. But Taylor is a historic artist because she is a billionaire only based on that. Her tour is about to be the biggest tour in the history of the world as far as tickets sold, money made. And so at this point in her career, I'm so tired of people writing her off. This is what drives me absolutely nuts. It's not like a pipe dream of, like, I don't understand people liking Taylor Swift. Like, it gets to a point where you have to admit, head in the sand, like, I really haven't listened to, like, a full album ever. I've only ever heard radio hits. I vaguely pay attention to her so I don't get the hype. You have to admit that, because if you deep dive or pay attention to her for 15 minutes, if you just spend, you know, if you listen to three songs in a row on an album, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. But so many people don't do that. And then, like, well, I don't understand. It's like, it's so annoying to me. But at this point, she is in the same category, and people get mad, and I keep saying this. She's in the same category as Michael Jackson, Prince, and Madonna. These are, and the Beatles. She is the biggest of the big of all time, like your great-great-grandchildren. Well, maybe you won't be alive for that much, but great-grandchildren, maybe for lucky, grandchildren are going to be asking you, what was it like growing up in the height of Taylor Swift? Just like, oh, and Elvis. Just like I ask my grandparents, I asked both of my grandmas, did you ever see Elvis in concert? One of them did. So I asked all about that. What was that like? Like, we're going to be asked questions like, what was it like going to the Eras Tour? Okay. So I wish people could just, like, understand that. Now, in the interview, so she gets the title and there's, like, pictures and stuff, but also there's a whole interview, and Taylor doesn't do interviews at all anymore. Like, really, really doesn't do interviews. And this is, like, a huge milestone award, obviously. So she did for this. And it's been a really long time since we got one of these. So I want to go over a couple of the juiciest things that she shared in this. But first, I have to speak to a lot of the conservatives, including my friend Jack Posobiec, who I love dearly, who think that Taylor Swift getting the Time Person of the Year was is like some kind of mastermind political 2024 strategy. What? First of all, is the left looking to use Taylor Swift to their advantage in 2024? Of course. That isn't new. They do all the time. Miley Cyrus, they, you know, use Olivia Rodrigo, Katy Perry. Like, they've campaigned for people. They've showed up to the White House. Like, that is not new for the left or the Democrats. That's not a new thing of, like, plucking different celebrities who are, like, really buzzed about and being like, can you come on my campaign? Can you visit at the White House or what have you? Like, it happens all the time. I mean, the thing is, Trump does the exact same stuff. It's just that conservatives, like, we never have anyone who's at the top of their game. If they are conservative, they're not admitting it because Hollywood would cancel them. So, you know, the people that, like, endorse Trump are like, Fetty Wap is coming to mind, but that's not right. Is it Chief Keef, Lil Wayne, Lil Uzi Vert or something? All these stupid names. I can't keep them straight. But, like, Trump has people that are, like, so, like, minimal on the radar. I'm sorry, but it's just true. Like, if we had somebody that big, we would also be like, we need you out here, like, really talking about, you know, whoever this, you know, candidate is on the right or whatever. Like, everybody does the same thing. So this whole thing, like, oh my gosh, is the left gonna use Taylor Swift? Like, duh. Of course they are. And here's the thing. Taylor, it's like, will she make a grand political gesture? Most likely. She's probably going to donate an absurd amount of money to whatever campaign she endorses. She's probably going to set up, I'm going to guess, she's going to set up voter registration booths on her tour like Ariana Grande did next year when she's in the U.S. I think that Taylor will probably make a social media post, which she has done for several election cycles. Like, everybody's like, Taylor Swift is going to shill for the libs. Like, of course she is. She has been. I don't get it. It's like, I don't understand this, like, out of, everybody's, like, shocked by this or whatever. I don't think that Taylor Swift getting Time Person of the Year is, like, some grand political lever pull. It's just, she is the person of the year. This is what's annoying. Like, you have to, that's why I'm asking you, did you go to anything where her name wasn't brought up? Did you, you know, do you understand her streaming numbers? Spotify most streamed artist of the year. Like, she's outselling everything. Her tour, five nights in a row, 70,000 people sold out. Do you understand the impact? Like, you don't. So for you to be like, well, the only reason she must have gotten Time Person of the Year is because they want her to talk about their politics. Like, no, it's just stupid. Like, they have tons of options. Anyone, I mean, any celebrity is willing to talk about the, you know, voting for the left. Taylor Swift isn't an exception. She's not like a unicorn. Like, she's going to do that anyway, though. She's been doing it for years. So, I don't understand the pearl clutching happening amongst conservatives about her being on this cover like it's some kind of Batman signal about the 2024 election. This kind of stuff makes us look insane. Now, the question is, will Taylor Swift, is she like a huge threat? Do we need to be worried in 2024 about, you know, her impact on voters? I think that Taylor Swift's impact on voters personally is going to be minimal. Minimal and with a select group. Her impact will maybe show a little bit with the 18 to 25 crowd. Because who's 18 to 25? 18 to 25 is graduating from high school, barely graduating from college. It's the same group that heavily votes left anyway, number one. They have no life experience to know that of how, you know, policies will affect them and their paychecks, etc. Some of them are getting their first paycheck ever for the first time. They have nothing to compare it to. You know, give it a few years, just like any other celebrity. Celebrities every year, it's not that scary, you guys. It's not that scary. Celebrities every year since the dawn of time, vote for the left, vote for the left, vote for the left. People do what they want because celebrities are completely out of touch. They don't understand what we're going through as normal, regular schmeeple like you and I. So I am not scared about Taylor Swift endorsing anybody for the presidential election. Okay, let's get to the part that really matters here, which is the juicy stuff that was shared in the interview. And sorry if that was annoying, but like, I just don't think people critically think. I would love to have a conversation with somebody who's like really concerned that's actually a Swiftie that's on the right. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I don't get it. Okay. Fun things in the Time interview. Taylor Swift is, this is my favorite, Taylor Swift is in her bed rotting era. Bed rot era. Do you know what that is? Do you know what it means? Do you know what it means? You know what means bed rot era? Taylor Swift revealed that after every show, she lays in bed for a few days and absolutely does not leave bed except to get food and bring it back to bed because it's so intensive doing those shows 3 hours straight. What is it? 70 songs. I don't even remember. It's like, it's so absurd. The amount of work that goes into these shows and so exhausting for multiple days straight. Like, she has to fully recuperate and rest her body and her voice. So she just stays in bed and she rots. And now we know why Travis Kelce was photographed buying snacks after Taylor landed a couple weeks ago, a week ago or whatever. She landed in Kansas City, right? After those hellish Brazil shows. She lands in She lands in Kansas City. Travis photographed at Trader Joe's picking up snacks by himself. And people are like, what the heck is going on? We know Taylor Swift landed. She's at his house. This is what was going on. She was resting in bed and Travis went to get snacks. I'm unwell. Forget hot girl walks. In winter, we hot girl rot. And that's exactly what I'm doing over Christmas break. I'm not going home. I'm staying in bed to Hot Girl Rot. I am going to spend Christmas, and I'm so excited. I'm spending Christmas alone in bed, watching movies. Maybe I'll make myself a little one-person Christmas dinner. That's it. That's all. She had a moment where she completely gagged Joe Alwyn with this quote. She said, "Life is short. Have adventures. Me locking myself away in my house for a lot of years, I'll never get that time back." Whoa. Whoa. Joe Alwyn needs a welfare check. She told Time that she began training. I thought this was interesting for the Eras tour. 6 months before it started, she said, "Every day I would run on the treadmill, sing the entire set list out loud while running on the treadmill. Fast for fast songs, she would do a jog or a fast walk for slow songs. And then she had 3 months of dance training," she said, "because she wanted to get it in my bones." She said, "That's something I would say. I want to get it in my bones. I wanted to be so over rehearsed." And this is how she thinks about us and cares about her audience. She said, "I wanted to be so over rehearsed for the show and the dance that I could be silly with the fans and not lose my train of thought." That is so cute. That is like so cute. She revealed that when she was 17, she actually scored the opening slot for Kenny Chesney's tour. And right after Kenny Chesney reached out to her and was like, "Hey, congratulations, you're going to open for me," which would have been at 17. I mean, that would have been a huge moment for Taylor in her career at that point because she was so new and still so unknown. But the tour then got sponsored by a beer company, and because Taylor was underage, she wasn't legally allowed to join the tour. And so a couple months later at her 18th birthday party, she said that Kenny Chesney's promoter handed her a card from Kenny Chesney himself, and it said, "I'm sorry that you couldn't come on the tour, so I wanted to make it up to you." And in that Christmas card, he had written a check, she said, that was more money than she had ever seen in her life. So it must have been tens of thousands of dollars. She said she was able to pay her band bonuses. She said she was able to pay for her tour buses, and she was able to fuel her dream. So actually, it might have been hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, he could have written her a check for $500,000. I don't know. But it must have been something crazy because she said it was able to fuel my dreams. Like, she was able to use that to probably go into making her next album and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that tidbit was cute. And then when this interview came out, Kenny Chesney posted a really sweet tribute to Taylor, telling her, like, "I love you. I always believed in you. Like, I'm so proud of you. I, you know, from the moment I first met you, I knew you were a superstar. The way that you do business, the way that you interact with your fans and your audience is so unlike anyone else in this industry." And so that was very, very sweet of him. She did talk about her relationship with Travis Kelce. And I want you to understand the significance of this. This interview was specifically about, it was a career milestone for her and about her. And she chose to dedicate an entire section to Travis and their relationship. You have to understand Taylor to know that that is huge and should be taken very seriously. This is a serious, serious, serious relationship to her. Maybe the most serious ever. She said that they had been dating for a while when she went to that first game that we saw publicly. So what I have figured out, I mean, I think I've talked about this already, but just to reiterate, I've been saying I'm pretty sure that they started dating in July. And so by the time she went to his game, I think it was the end of September. So they would have been, she said they were official. So she said that I would have, she said, "We're not psycho enough to do a first date like that public with all those cameras and like everything." And it makes sense because that moment in that video where Taylor and Travis are walking out of the stadium, you can feel that tension of them wanting to hold hands, but not. It's because they were so comfortable with each other and used to being physical with each other that it was like awkward not holding hands. But they probably didn't want to freak everybody out because the public perceived that moment as this is a first date. And so if they would have started holding hands, we were like, "Wah!" You know, people would have lost it. But she says they were already official and had been for a while. So now August, September, October, November, December, they've been together for 5 months, so it's going. She said, when you say a relationship is public, that means I'm going to see him do what he loves. We're showing up for each other. She said, other people are there and we don't care. And we're just proud of each other. She talked about how she was totally blown away by him mentioning on his podcast that, you know, he had reached out to her and made the friendship bracelet and all this. She said that she thought it was metal. And I thought that was freaking cute, too. She's like, that was so metal of him. Like, love. Okay, so that is the two big stories. And then I have two huge, really juicy things to tell you to watch. So thank you, by the way, for stopping by. This is the last Poplitics Live of the year. Make sure you're thumbsing up the video. This is like what I mean. Half of you that are in here right now have liked the video. You have to thumbs up the video. Only half. Like, this number right now should just explode. Like, I should see it above, like, in front of my eyes all of a sudden jump up. Like, 75 people in one click. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, it should be doing that. So you guys have to like the video and make sure you're subscribed to this channel. Because I will have content coming out on the YouTube channel, by the way, during the holiday break. So over the next couple weeks, even though there's no Poplitics Live, you will get a spillover episode still every week. I've never missed a spillover episode, new one. And you will also get different long form videos on the YouTube channel that we have filmed. There we go. Now I'm seeing thumbs go up as it should. Keep going. Keep going. It's embarrassing when you guys are just lazy. It's like going out to eat and not tipping. What is this life? Freeloaders. Okay, holiday homework. Get your phone out right now. Get your notepad out. Two things you absolutely must watch that I watched last weekend so I could tell you about it. First, only some with taste will understand the three-hour Emma Chamberlain interview with this YouTube channel called Colin and Samir. So Colin and Samir is a YouTube channel that is all about content creators and influencers. It's two friends and they interview the biggest of the big TikTokers, podcasters, YouTubers, all about their craft, how they make their content, struggles, you know, what are their career highs, career lows, all this kind of stuff. It's very interesting. If it's a creator that you like, I mean, that's not something I would listen to like every single episode. You know, it's like you tune in for somebody that you're interested in. Everybody knows I, in the last year, have become like the biggest Emma Chamberlain fangirl ever. My parents don't understand it. I had them watch a video with me over Thanksgiving break. And my mom literally said, I don't get this. She just films herself doing nothing all day. Like, she rots in her bed. She's just rotting in bed and like making coffee and picking her nose and farting. And you like this? And I was like, Mom, you don't understand. It's freaking art. It's art. It's incredible. So Colin and Samir, this guy that you're seeing, they interview her for 3 freaking hours. Now, here's what I want to tell you. They've also had like Brittany Broski on and other creators like that. But you have to watch this, and you also have to watch it on like the fastest speed that they offer. One, you'll get through it really quickly because you're speeding up the interview. But for some reason, and I've never really seen her do this otherwise, she takes really long pauses while she's speaking. And after it, at first it's like endearing, and then it gets really irritating because it's like, holy crap, dude, it's like taking so long to get through one sentence. So this is how she talks in this interview. She goes like, yeah. So Wednesday, it really was a great day. That's how she talks. I got through like 15 minutes of that. I was like, what the hell is going on? So I like put it all the way up like two times fast or whatever. And then it was fine. Then she spoke like a normal person. And I was able to get through it. So anyway, the interview is phenomenal. There were so many interesting things that I learned about like how YouTube works, the crazy drama behind the scenes with YouTube creators, just if you're an Emma fan, you know, she's kind of gone through cycles of like different types of YouTube videos she puts out, and she talks about burnout and all this. It's just, it's interesting. A lot of it I could relate to, not even close to the scale that she's on. Obviously, she's like a mega uber famous person, and I'm not even anything close. But like, just the idea of like constantly feeling like you're bored with what you're doing, you need to reinvent yourself, you know, because you guys are like, why did you change this? How come Poplitics Live is this? And then Poplitics was this, and the spillover is this, and now we're doing this. It's like, she explains exactly what it feels like for us when it's like constantly our whole life is like dance, monkey, dance, dance, monkey, dance. Like, and it's the worst. And then it makes you like not even feel like a person sometimes. So anyway, she goes through that. Highly recommend this. The second thing, and this is really juicy, you'll like this more. You must watch the movie May, December on Netflix. Must watch. Everybody, guys, girls, your husband, your nephew, everybody. It is based on, and tell me in the chat if you know who this is. Just say, do you know who this is? And then have a poll. Yes, no. Do you know the Muffin Man? No. Do you know Mary Kay Letourneau, who was arrested in 1997? She pled guilty to 2 counts of child rape. She was a teacher, a middle school teacher, who had an affair on her husband. She was married. Just wait. Married, 4 kids, teacher, cheats on her husband with her 12-year-old student. Just wait, if you never heard this, because some Gen Zers will be like, this is the first time I've ever heard this story. Cheats on her husband with this 12-year-old, but they continue to have it. She goes to prison and everything for 7 years. They stay together. They end up getting married. And then they have 2 kids together. This is a real, this is the movie. I mean, it is the movie. But what I'm saying is this is a real life story that happened in the 90s. It was all over the tabloids. America could not believe what was happening. And this is the, it's so crazy because they get married and then they have kids and they stay together forever, forever. They just got divorced in like 2017, 2018 or something like that. And then she died of cancer like a year later. It was like they got divorced and then she died anyway. And now they have 2 girls that are like in college, older 20s. And now this guy is living his life and his whole life since he was 12 years old. He married his teacher who raped him when he was a kid. And so the movie, May, December, it has Julianne Moore. It has Natalie Portman in it. And the concept is interesting because it's based on this story completely. Like a lot of it is exact. It's based on this story. But the concept is that Julianne Moore is playing the rapist teacher and then, you know, her husband and all this. And then Natalie Portman is playing an actress, a different actress who has been cast to play this woman. And they have different names in May, December, but she's cast to go and study their family and hang out with them for like a few weeks to get to know them and their story and how they act and everything, because Natalie Portman is going to portray the rapist teacher and her relationship in a film. And so the whole movie, the concept of this movie is, oh, there's so many things. It's like it's real cinema. So it's like you watch this and there's so much like cinematic art to it. And it's one of those things where it's very complicated and very disturbing and complex, because it's like, is it wrong? Yes. But then they ended up allegedly falling in love and staying together for their entire life. And they're married and they have children and they're normal people. They're your neighbors. They're coming to potlucks. They're hosting graduation ceremonies for their kids in college. And, you know, people show up and it's like, it's how do you interact with somebody like that? How do you portray somebody like that? There's so many deep layers to a relationship. It's like, is this guy truly in love with her and it's just like a really weird love story, or has he just been so groomed his entire life and doesn't know any better and like trapped, you know what I mean? So the movie explores that, and it also explores the delicate and kind of ethical questions that you have when an actor is asked to portray something very sensitive, like a story like this, and how it can be very invasive and disturbing and has its own ethical problems with how you're getting this information and blah, blah, blah. So it's phenomenal, phenomenal, like Oscar worthy, phenomenal. May, December. And here is a little bit of the trailer.
How do you choose your roles?
I want to find a character that's difficult to, on the surface, understand. Were they born or were they made? It's such a pleasure to meet you.
You are so sweet. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for doing this. It's so generous.
Well, I want you to tell the story, right, don't I? You're taller. You look taller on television, but we're basically the same size.
Well, basically the same.
Feels like things just settled down and now y'all are making a movie.
It's a very complex and human story.
I think it's hard to trust that you're going to represent
Gracie as she was.
I'm going to try.
Do you remember when you first met?
You came to the pet store looking for a job.
It was summer after sixth grade?
Seventh.
Why do you want to play me?
When they sent me the script, I thought, here is a woman with a lot more to her than I remember from the tabloids.
What would make a 36-year-old woman have an affair with a seventh grader?
People, they like see me as a victim. I wanted it.
I am telling you, you will love this movie. It is so freaking fascinating. And then, of course, afterwards, I'm like Googling all this stuff about Mary Kay Letourneau and that whole situation, like where he ended up. They did, right before her death, the craziest interview I think I have ever seen. I think it was an Australian news company agency. I don't know. An Australian news company did a piece on the real people, and it's like you can see how he's like a child and she controls everything, and he isn't really in love with her, and he's like trapped in this relationship in the real interview. And I watched that. It was like I don't know, a half hour. It's on YouTube. After watching this movie, I was just beside myself. There is a book, a fiction book, that is based on a concept like this about a girl who, it's a very dark book. The book is called My Dark Vanessa. I've highly rated it. It's one of my favorite books ever. But it's about a high schooler who falls in love with her teacher, and he grooms her, rapes her. I mean, you know, it's rape because she's underage. They have a full-blown relationship, but then they carry that relationship into her late adulthood until he finally passes away as an old man. And it's about that complicated relationship between a child who stays with their abuser for, like, their entire life after they also become an adult. And you see the person, as they become an adult, try to reconcile with, like, did I really love this person? Was I capable of making those choices? Was I capable of loving them? And it's just this, it's one of those things where there's so many layers and black and white and, you know, nuance, and it's hard. It's I love things like this that really puzzle you and make you think. So the book, if you want a book to read this December, I mean, I've posted about this like 2 years ago, but it's called My Dark Vanessa. The show is May December on Netflix. So it got May December got a 7.2 on IMDb. It has a 92% Rotten Tomatoes and 85% score on Metacritic. So yeah, see, I mean, I'm telling you the truth. It's phenomenal. So anyway, those are the two pieces of homework that you have. If you watch it, please do like a little selfie or like a little video or something. Tag me in your story of you watching it, and then in your rating, be like, Alex was right or Alex was wrong, and then tell me what you think about it. Spillover this week is all about dating and relationships. How do you know who the toxic one is in your relationship? Is your partner a narcissist? Who should text first? The truth about living together before marriage and more from a former family and marriage therapist and psychologist. It's such a good episode. I didn't know like what to expect when I was going in for that interview. Like, I mean, I always hope it's going to be good, but you never know. It was a great interview with so many interesting things to learn if you're, you know, married and in a committed relationship, or if you're single and dating. There's a lot of single dating advice. A lot of you have been asking, what about us? You're always doing marriage stuff. There's tons of single dating advice, okay? So that's exciting for this week. Next week is a celebrity guest. I'm telling you the whole month rundown right now. Because this is the last live, so I'm going to tell you all in advance. Next week is a celebrity guest. He was the face of surviving child abuse in the 90s. Does that ring any bells? Face of child abuse in the 90s. Then it's an episode about how fragile and corrupt our food system is, especially the meat industry. This, you think, I don't know about that, might be boring when I tell you. It is the most edge of your seat episode. So there were times I had to, like, pause, adjust, take in what was being told to me by this rancher that has shook me to my core. I will never be the same after this interview. that comes out, then we end December with a clinical psychologist who believes that antidepressants are placebos and that ADHD is a scam. It is this whole lineup this month. We don't skimp. We don't skimp and we don't scrimp. It's hot girl rot with a spillover in your bed all month long. Fabulous month of episodes for something for truly everybody. Relationships, true crime, big food, toxic therapy industry, big pharma. It's so freaking good. It's just like home run after home run after home run. I really didn't lay off, even though we have the holidays. So I hope you guys, despite the holidays, are actually going to watch these episodes with your family on YouTube or whatever, and you don't miss because it's been so phenomenal. Subscribe to Real Alex Clark on YouTube and The Spillover wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss or forget. Also, reminder, this is the last Poplitics Live of 2023 due to AM Fest and holiday break. Poplitics Live will resume Wednesday, January 3rd at 6 p.m. Eastern. Thumbs up this video, subscribe. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. It's Pop Culture Without the Propaganda. I'm Alex Clark, and this is Pop.